Coming up on Colchonero Chat, international break had us down, but we're back at it today with our own Martin Connolly, managing Madrid's Gabe Lesra, and Villarreal USA's Francisco Hernandez. We're talking transfer bans, World Cup qualifying, the Champions League draw, and two very different starts to the season, among other topics. Let's do it. Guys, good to have you here. It's a four-man panel today, our largest one so far.
Yeah, it's exciting to be here. This is Gabe, and I'm really glad to finally get to meet all you guys in person, I guess, virtually.
Yeah. Gabe is here.
What's going on, Martin?
Martin's here.
Just delighted to finally be part of this. I was kind of hoping to come on a couple of weeks ago, but just time didn't allow it. I just want to say fair play to Jeremy and Rob, because anyone else has contributed so far, because they've done a really good job with it, and hopefully we keep it up from here on out.
Appreciate that, man. And Francisco joins us as well.
Hey guys, I'm glad to be here representing the Villarreal.
Yeah. By the way, if our listeners don't read Villarreal USA, make sure you do. Really good content at that site, Villarreal USA. Lots to talk about on this edition of Colchonero Chats, the podcast of record of IntoTheCalderon.com and a proud member of the SB Nation family of blogs. We took an international break. We succumbed to the pressure. We succumbed to the malaise that affects so many of us during international break. It's ridiculous. You know, two weeks into the league season, we have to take a break.
I hate international breaks. they are just the worst. I wish that basically we didn't have to deal with this at all. And the only time they actually played international football was during the summers. That's my thought on international breaks.
It's kind of like, you know, you're waiting 3 months for like competitive football to come back, and then after 2 weeks, you get the international break, and it breaks it up a bit too much. You don't really mind in October because you're kind of back in the rhythm of it, but after 2 weeks, it does kind of drag on.
It does. Really does. Francisco?
I think, likewise, such a burden for the clubs. You have players returning under... They're tired, or either they suffer injuries. It just puts a heavy burden on the clubs who actually pay the footballers.
And you also have the FIFA virus you have to worry about. And players don't come back in tip-top shape, but they don't start the season in great form, great fitness. But we will talk. Go ahead. Go ahead, Martin.
It's kind of funny, just, you know, you see players being rested after, like, the Euros, and then they're probably only back for fitness in time, and then it comes an international break. So I'm sure there's a lot of managers that just wouldn't be happy with that.
I think a lot of managers especially would be happier if they just kind of went away. But we'll talk all about that, talk all about the various Atletico players, Real Madrid players, Villarreal players who were participating for their national teams. But right now, we got to start with the news that broke yesterday about the transfer ban. Atletico and Madrid both hit with one-year transfer bans. The initial findings were published in January. FIFA handed out the sanctions in January, but the appeals process took 8 months, because of course it did. And yesterday, we finally received the confirmation that the Madrid sides will be banned from making transfers. Martin and I have our thoughts on this from the Atletico perspective. Gabe, from the Real Madrid perspective, what are your thoughts on it?
There was this moment, I don't know if you guys were following this, where there's this weird, I think we were tipped off by someone in Real Madrid that there was a possibility, or at least a thought within the club, that FIFA wasn't actually going to ban either side. And so that got everyone pretty excited, and then suddenly, it didn't really go down. I mean, I would say that from Madrid angle, there are a lot of people, I think a shockingly large amount of people on that are on Managing Madrid and in some of the you know louder segments of Real Madrid Twitter that are very excited about a transfer ban. That no one is happy that, you know, exactly, but no, some people are genuinely happy because they feel like they don't trust the Madrid's board to not gut the team or whatever, and so. They feel like the roster is strong and deep, and so kind of tying the team's hands and preventing them really from doing anything for a year might actually have, pay real dividends. But I don't know. I'm not exactly of that belief myself.
Is there some concern on your end or on any other people in Madrid Twitter? Is there a concern that Real Madrid's core is a little older than Atletico's core? I mean, obviously some very exciting young players, Asensio especially, Morata coming back this summer. But is there a concern that, you know, players like Pepe, Cristiano, you know, getting a little older?
No. I mean, obviously there's every year there's kind of a conversation about what happens in the post-Cristiano Ronaldo era, but he's just coming off one of his best years ever, so there's not a ton of worry right now about him. You know, it's only a year, so, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo could, I mean, really, it's more than, I mean, like, if you actually think about it, it's two windows, so it's actually more than a year, so we can't...
Yeah, a little more than a year.
This January window, neither team can sign next window, so it's not until next January, like, not this coming January, but the January after that that anyone's going to be able to sign. But... you know, all that, you know, notwithstanding, I actually don't, I mean, there's not a lot of people worried about, so for example, there's a belief in Real Madrid right now that the team is young enough at the important places that it can actually sustain kind of the aging core. So, for example, Pepe obviously isn't getting older, but Varane is 20, 22, 23, and Ramos is 30 now. But in one, you know, 1.5 years, he'll only be 31 and a half. So that's not a huge, like, there's not a noticeable change, like a documented one, between players age 30 and 31 seasons, maybe between players age 30 and 33 seasons.
Right.
And then Benzema, Bale, they're all 26, 27. I think the only question in my mind is Luka Modric, who's not getting tons younger. But there's a belief in the club, I think, that there are two players that kind of can fit into that role, and one of them is Mateo Kovacic, who's 21. So, you know, I think this is one of the deeper and younger squads that Madrid has had in recent times. So if Madrid was ever prepared, you know, to deal with this this ban, I think it's this season. Obviously, that being said, I would have rather had Madrid go out and try to grab someone like David Alaba, who is young and versatile enough to cover kind of injuries. But such is life.
Yeah, such is life. I kind of tend to agree with that. From the Atletico perspective, though, Martin, what are your thoughts on how this affects Atletico?
I think, like it was any other summer, you would be concerned, like, but because money isn't something that they usually spend. But you know, you look at the summer, you kind of knew that they expected this to be there. I mean, they really, just looking at the squad today, I mean, they have a really good second squad that can even cover injuries if they have no suspensions. It's just, you know, you always do want to have the option at least of like dipping in just to cover a couple of holes in the squad or whatever. So there is kind of that concern that, you know, maybe one or two signings can boost the squad. But I think overall, I think, and even Real Madrid, as Gabe was saying, if ever there was a time for them to be hit with a transfer ban, I think it's now.
I would agree with that. Francisco, as an outsider, you know, in a way, What are your thoughts? What is the perspective you can bring as a Villarreal writer primarily? What are your views on the ban and how does it affect La Liga, the other teams in the top four, top five, etc.?
Well, my first impression was that it was shocking.
Mm.
I didn't actually thought that the ban would actually go on. I thought that both those kind of chances to make appeals and to try to revert the situation, but it didn't happen. Obviously, it feels strange to say the least. Really,
yeah, it's a little strange for us too. It's a little surreal, but you finally made it as a big club when you get banned.
Yeah.
Atletico are a big club now, guys. I think,
true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been true for a while, but yeah. I agree.
I think for my perspective, I would generally say that this is there isn't ever a good time to get banned. There isn't a good time to say your club cannot make transfers for the next year plus. But Atletico and Madrid as well have been building for this. Atletico knew this was coming last summer. They've gotten younger and younger. They've sent a lot of young players on loan that they can bring back, Vieto particularly, now at Sevilla. But Atletico have been preparing for this.
Yeah, this loan, it was funny because I didn't actually look into it too closely, but it does appear that it's possible to bring back Loni. So that is going to be very helpful for both Madrid and Atleti. As Madrid, for example, has Jesús Vallejo, Borja Mayoral, and most importantly, I think very interestingly, is this guy Diego Llorente, who's center defensive mid box to boxy type role that is actually a big weakness for Madrid right now. So it's very possible Madrid could actually exercise a loan like clause in his loan contract to bring him back in January if for example someone like Casemiro were to get injured.
And you kind of need a stand-in for him.
Second one, Jim. There would be a little bit of concern for Gabe, though, that Real Madrid just brought back him after the summer and didn't really do much else, like, because they knew that this was coming.
Yeah, I actually am really, you know, and maybe I'm out on a limb here as a Madrid fan, but I actually am pretty upset that there wasn't a little bit more effort to kind of cover the face, you know, cover the depth issues, especially at that defensive midfield spot. That's why I was pushing, you know, that's why I was favoring the incorporation of Alaba. It turned out that Zidane was looking at a couple of players and Madrid just didn't, you know, obviously make a move. They felt that the price tag on Paul Pogba, for example, was just too high, which is kind of ridiculous because it's Madrid and
right. They
can basically print money. So they didn't go after, well, you know, Florentino decided not to go after Paul Pogba, and you know, they also decided that that they weren't going to pursue someone like N'Golo Kanté from Leicester. And even though that was another player that Zidane showed and expressed interest in, so I felt that, you know, if it's better than gutting the team, but it wasn't. I don't think it was a particularly successful summer. Other than the kind of explosion of the scene of Marco Asensio, where everyone kind of expected him to go out back on loan, but he just played so well that it didn't make any sense to send him back out.
Not at all. He's going to be very, very important for you guys.
But yeah, I do agree that it didn't make a ton of sense to me not to buy and buy young. I think the only, you know, reason, the only kind of rational reason I thought there was that Florentino genuinely believed that the ban was going to be overturned. Like, the way that Madrid has been talking about it, the case that they thought they were presenting, and I believe Atleti's in the same camp here, was very different from the case that Barcelona was bringing, which was basically like, we shouldn't have to be subject to this rule because La Masia is essentially, you know, a school that's very protective of its youngsters. But Real Madrid and Atleti, I think, were basically contesting the substance of each one of the allegations that FIFA were bringing up. And that's a very different case. And so it's possible that both teams thought that that FIFA would at least knock down the transfer ban for one window, maybe just have it one window, or fine them or whatever. And, you know, obviously that's not what happened.
It's interesting that you say that, because I do believe Atletico are challenging on grounds of substance. Will that make a difference when they appeal to the CAS, which Atletico have announced they're going to do, Real Madrid announced they're going to do? Will it make a difference?
No, it won't. CAS is an arbitral panel that adjudicates these disputes, and they give a tremendous amount of deference to the interpretations of the local federation, or the federation that is interpreting its own law. So the CAS is going to be interpreting Article 19 of the FIFA regulations based on the way FIFA interprets Article 19 of the FIFA regulations. And if FIFA already interpreted that article in a way that will ban Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, it's pretty unlikely that the CAS, the CAS, would overturn that decision, in my view. That being said, they do have the ability to do that. It just is very unlikely, especially, and I'll just finish, you know, this little rant there, the fact that the CAS, unlike most civil arbitral tribunals, and this is being a little law nerdy, actually does seem to follow precedent in most cases. So most arbitral tribunals actually don't have a system of stare decisis or precedent following. And in this case, they seem to. And that would mean that Real Madrid and Atletico would likely be bound by the precedent that the CAS found when they banned Barca for two windows. So
yeah, from what I was reading yesterday, it seems like they're just going to go off precedent. It seems like there's no really other reason for them to do otherwise, which is kind of to be expected.
Successfully distinguish this situation from Barca, which
sure
Doesn't seem likely.
Sure, because it seems like the three teams did roughly the same things. which I kind of wrote about yesterday in my little write-up about the band. But yeah, I kind of am of the same view that this doesn't really move the needle much. I mean, both teams are obviously very good. And Atletico were building for this, Real Madrid building for this as well. A younger core with Atletico, but definitely younger players in Madrid's team as well. I think some people are overlooking that there are younger players there who are going to get a lot of playing time. Asensio especially. Lucas Vasquez plays plenty.
Right, and then Atleti, obviously, you have a very strong young core with a number of exciting young players. So it's not the end of the world. I just am a little surprised that Madrid didn't try to prepare a little bit better.
It's interesting though, because there was a lot of speculation. I know it's only speculation, but that Maracho was going to be sold. So he was the only player that he really brought in. So then you question, if he was sold, what would they have done anyways?
Right. I mean, I think the idea was that they felt that a Morata sale would have paved the way for Pogba, but I think that Juve was really insistent that the price tag was going to be over 100 million for him, and I don't think Madrid had any interest in paying that. And they probably had a couple conversations with Juve where they said, look, we'll let you keep Morata, or, you know, we won't exercise our buyback option, which is essentially giving Juve a 60 million euro player for 30 million. But we also expect you to jump in with allowing us to use Pogba.
What do you think this does for Isco and Hammers, for example? I don't think they'll be very happy with it's been hard enough for them to move.
Yeah, that's a tough situation for Madrid. Though it's interesting because there were some rumors that both kind of entourages had kind of requested that they be moved or whatever. But then when it came down to the business end of the transfer window, it seemed that both players made it very clear that they had no interest. We know that Hamas had offers from Chelsea and Arsenal and I think United even, and Isco had offers from Juve and Spurs, and both kind of shut it down. Hamas came out in the Celta Vigo game and played a great game for Madrid in what was a really tough match, and he was really instrumental to leading Madrid to a win after giving up an equalizer. So he played his heart out, and he seems to be willing to fight for a spot on the side. So I guess that's what's going to happen, but it's going to be hard to imagine a more crowded front three.
Indeed it is. And since you brought that up, that's actually a pretty good segue into how the Liga Santander season has started. Now, Gabe, your team started very well. Atletico haven't. Villarreal, not really either. So the game against Celta Vigo, late goal from Toni Kroos, got the 3 points, 100% record so far, 6 points, top of the table with Las Palmas and Barcelona. What are your thoughts on the start to the season for Real Madrid?
I mean, I'm pretty happy about it. I'm not, you know, I'm happy that Madrid got the 6 points out of the first two games, right? But it's not like that Celta Vigo game at home was a particularly easy one. Now, it's the kind of game, you know, there's a optimistic way of looking at it, and there's a pessimistic way of looking at the start of the season so far. The optimistic way of looking at it is basically that this is a game that an Ancelotti or certainly a Benitez coach Madrid might very well have given up and just kind of drawn. It was a very hot day in Madrid, like the Celta were playing a really intense press, etc. And this Madrid decided to fight back and pull to the end and have this kind of spirit that the Zidane Madrid seemed to have. The pessimistic view is, how on earth are we letting Celta Vigo pull back to a 1-1 game and then really play their hearts out against Madrid in the Bernabeu in the opening match? Like, that's not, it wasn't optimistic, you know, in kind of a grander scheme of things. It's not a particularly good performance. It was just lucky and good that Madrid got the win. But it's not like Madrid looked particularly good in that game.
Yeah.
Those are my two kind of, I'm wrestling with both of them.
Now, you're not looking good, but you're getting the wins. Villarreal and Atletico aren't. Francisco, Villarreal starting with a 1-1 draw against Granada. Pretty good game there. Samu Castillejo goal, one of my personal favorites. I'm glad he scored. And then the goalless draw against Sevilla, a Sevilla side that scored 6 goals the previous week, and then a goalless stalemate. What are your thoughts on how the season started, how the adjustment period is going with no Marcelino?
It's
it's complicated to say the least. Not the ideal scenario we were hoping. Like you said, of course, we knew things weren't going to be easy since Marcelino was sacked. But it's been a tough time for BRL. Yeah, BRL supporter. Soldado was our main player in attack. He torn his ACL and he's gonna be out for 6 months. We brought players like Borre, of course, from you guys.
Yep.
And Sansone as well, and Alexander Pato. But it's not been an ideal start of the season for Villarreal. The club has struggled to score goals without Soldado, and Fran Escriba is trying to adapt his own style, which is very different from Marcelino's. Hopefully, we can win tomorrow against Malaga, who also has they haven't won either, and they also have brought a new coach like Juan de Ramos.
Yep. Yeah, it would be a good way to kickstart the season. And Malaga, I think, have expectations of a top half finish, especially after keeping Camacho on the last day of the window. Camacho, of course, a former Atletico Canterano. And speaking of Atletico, Martin, not the best start for Los Colchoneros. The 1-1 draw against...
This one is needed.
Yeah, indeed it is. The 1-1 draw against Alaves at home on a wonder goal in the final minute of added time. And then 2 weeks ago, the goalless draw against Leganes. Extremely frustrating games. I'll talk to you about this first. I'll ask you about this first. What are the prime culprits in this really slow start that has a lot of people worried? And is their worry justified?
I don't know. To be honest, after watching the Alaves game, it just felt unlucky. I know one of the writers on the website, Jake, he wrote a good article just showing that it was just a fluke. Like, you know, because Atletico had so many chances, and I think the Alaves goal was the first shot on target.
It was.
It's allowed to be
their second shot.
So, you know, sometimes you just have to hand it to them. But then you go into the next game, and it was dreadful. You know, I think apart from Griezmann's volley towards the end of the first half, and I think Guimero had a shot in the second half, but apart from that, there was like barely any real push on goal. And, you know, I know it sounds obvious, but you're not going to score if you don't try. And it just looked very, very slow, very uninspiring, which we're not used to from Atletico. You know, we're used to the high pressure and the fast pacing of Koke, for example. I think he'd be the number one disappointment of the season so far. I'm not saying it's completely his fault, because I do think, you know, you look at his performance with Spain in the last week, when he's actually playing as a deep-line playmaker, you know, he's able to pick the ball up and dictate play. I think when he's out in the wing, he's coming in and he's playing now, and, you know, that's not the position for him, in my opinion. Obviously, Simeone knows more, but, you know, I think that's one of the things. I think maybe push Koke in centre, bring Carrasco in, you get more width, get more support for Felipe Luis. I don't know if you'd agree with that, Jeremy, but I think that's just something that has to happen, is bring Carrasco in first.
I think Simeone's team selections have been kind of curious, playing with four central midfielders in both games. Koke's out on the wing again, where he's not as influential. It helps him because he tracks back and he puts pressure on fullbacks, but he can't create. And last season, the big change came, I think, in March, when Simeone finally moved Koke back to the middle of the park. And that's when Atletico went on a bit of a run, started scoring a lot more goals, and the season culminated in heartbreaking fashion. But they would never have gotten there if Simeone had not changed his tactics towards the end of the season. But it's been a very strange start. The Alaves game seemed like they were unlucky. And I think they outshot them 27-2 in that game and lost on, or didn't lose. It felt like a loss, but they drew on this wonder goal from Manu Garcia. And the Leganes game was just, there was nothing inspiring about it. Like, I was tweeting about during the game how, you know how funny their shirt numbers look. That's how boring that game was. But Simeone's team selections have been strange against newly promoted sides. You're going to want to have the attacking impetus.
I don't think like two backs of four and then two up top, I don't think they work against teams that are just going to pack the midfield anyways, because you're going to be outnumbered. I mean, Gabi and Thiago, you know, obviously we love them and they're great players, but, you know, against teams like Alves and Lehners, I don't think they're the sort of players you want in the centre. I think you want Koke. Like you said, last March when he made the change, I think Koke got like 6 or 7 assists just to Torres.
The Torres alone, yep.
Yeah, like he turned Torres into a completely new player, or into the old Torres if you want. And, you know, just because Simeone is a smart man and we know that, and it's just surprising to see him kind of revert back to his old ways.
Maybe he thought he could get away with it, and it's just kind of speculation.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought he could get away with it, but it seems like he's going to go 4-3-3 tomorrow at Celta Vigo, which Balaidos is a very tough ground to win at, so you probably should have won your first two games. It's a very tough place to go and get 3 points, as Barcelona know from getting smashed there last year. It looks like Saúl, Gabi, and Koke are going to be the three in midfield, and Griezmann, Torres, and Carrasco start up top as the front three. Gaetan and Gamero on the bench.
And plus, at least you're saving Gamero, you're saving Augusto, you're saving Thiago,
yep.
Gaetan for PSV in midweek. So at least those four players get a rest. I assume that they're going to play, especially Augusto, since we really keep playing the Champions League anyway for Simeone.
Yeah, he was
so
definitely very important.
This is what the squad comes into, Jeremy, you know. Especially after an international break.
Yeah, I have to kind of bring some players back slowly. But this will make all three games. Gaetan has been on the bench to start all three games to start the year. It's a little strange, and I don't think what a lot of people expected considering the qualities he can bring to the team.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, again, Simeone kind of, I think he likes to play it safe, maybe a bit too much. Like you said, he probably thought two promoted teams could probably get away with it. Obviously, that's not been the case. And now it looks like he's changing it. So, you know, I think over the 2 weeks, he's probably sat down and said, obviously something needs to change, whether it's his tactics or just the personnel that he puts out there. And we're probably going to see a different team tomorrow, and hopefully a different performance, and definitely a different result.
It's going to have to be, because Celta Vigo have lost their first two games. So they're going to be inspired.
They lost them, but to be honest, they played well against Real Madrid. You know, that would be kind of a concern.
In that match, they are, I mean, I think that Madrid could have, and I think Atletico will do a just as good a job, if not better job at this, but one of the things that I noted was that they were really focusing in on this high press and encircling Casemiro, who's our holding midfielder, and he, you know, as many Madrid fans don't want to admit, but as I've been saying for a while, the man is, you know, he's very good in defense, but he really struggles in connecting play, and that's not actually a problem for, you know, Koke, for example. It's not, I don't think that is the issue for Atleti. So I don't know if this is as obvious a player on the pitch to circle and say, if you just, you know, make sure that this guy has the ball a lot and doesn't know where to go with it, then we'll you know, muck up play.
Yeah, just going to ask you, Gabe, because you've seen Celta Vigo that time against Real, and just the rumored team tomorrow, what do you think about that from Atletico? With the three-man midfield and the two wingers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Atleti is very good at moving this ball quickly out of defense, especially against a press like that, and kind of counter. You know, it's almost a counterattack, and that's what Celta was doing a very good job with Madrid. Madrid were trying very, very, very hard to kind of play it on the ground and then through the middle, and it didn't work against Celta. And the way that, that Madrid needed to attack Celta was by sending their speedy wingers down the down the flanks, trying to hit them in space, because they did leave a lot of room at the back. And you know, you got to figure that a Madrid team with Ronaldo and Bale at full force would have torn them apart. But you know, Bale was a little bit slow in the heat. I mean, he was one of the most important players on the pitch, but he was a little slow in the heat. And Ronaldo's obviously injured, so. You know, this is a Madrid with Morata, who is, you know, fast, but doesn't really bring the same, kind of verve of speed as Ronaldo or Benzema even. And with Asensio on the wing, who is really, you know, he's very good in attacking, he's very dynamic, but he's not a winger in the same way that Ronaldo is. So I think that Atleti will have a little bit better go of it, at least on that, unless, you know, what we're dealing with is a team that is just brilliant at figuring out the one weakness of every single team and exploiting it. And if so, maybe we're going to be dealing with quite a genius of a coach over there.
Yeah, Barreto is pretty highly rated, pretty good coach there. The start to the season for Atletico, I've seen some people say this is like a Dortmund's 2014-15 season, where they were fighting relegation for half the year. I think it's a little early to make those pronouncements, you know. It's only 2 weeks, and the season's just getting underway. That said, Atletico have lost a lot of ground early, 4 points behind Madrid and Barcelona, and it could be the title gone. Even at this early stage, it's just so hard to compete with those two teams for 38 weeks, which makes the league title in 2014 Simeone's greatest achievement with Atletico. Not even close.
Yeah.
It's so hard to compete with those two teams. So, speaking of those two teams, they're in the Champions League, along with Barcelona and Sevilla. Villarreal were in the Champions League, but not anymore. Sorry about that. What happened in that draw against Monaco? What happened?
A lot of things happened for the game. I think the biggest shocker was Marcelino's departure. That really changed things. It really changed perspective for the squad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just days before first leg of the playoff against Monaco was all of a sudden nobody really expected it to go that way. The new coach Franis Viva, he had less than 3 days to plan for the squad, and of course it was around that time that Coutinho got injured, our other main striker Bakambu also got injured. It really affected the squad for the first game against Monaco. And of course, we lost Eric Bailly too. We didn't replace him properly. Marcelino decided to sign Endai from Betis. He's not a defender. He's a defensive midfielder, but. Somehow, Marcelino was attempted to convert him into a center back, which didn't work. It didn't work.
The prognosis of Bruno concern for Villarreal, Francisco.
We haven't seen the best version of Bruno in this start of this season. We hope that he can pick up his best form as soon as possible, hopefully. It is a big disappointment not to be in the Champions League. This was Villarreal's most busiest transfer market window ever. We sold Bailey for 40 million to Manchester United. We signed Roberto Soriano and Sansone for 15 million each.
I did like the signing of Soriano. I rated him at Sampdoria.
I really
like that signing.
He's a very good player, very versatile. He can cover a lot of positions.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he's an Italian international player. Conte also rated some high IV. To be honest, we're not very fond of playing the Europa League once again. As you guys said, such is life.
Hey, Francisco, I had a question for you. Did you listen to the Marcelino, some of his interviews after the sacking? Have you been following this? I was just interested in getting your perspective on this. It's all about, you know, the kind of rumors have been that the sacking, at least part of it, was about that last game last season against Sporting, where allegations that he didn't, you know, maybe want to win that game or didn't, you know, try to win that game. Now, I'm not sure how much I believe that part of it, but, you know, he came on, I'm sure you know, he came on the radio recently. I actually got to listen to it. It was insane. And actually speak not just with the radio announcer, but also with Tebas, the LFP. And then the coach of Rayo Vallecano came on the same show and basically cursed him out. I'd be interested in knowing what, hearing your perspective, if you wouldn't mind, on some of that stuff.
Oh, not at all. Yeah, correct. Yeah, that this whole misunderstanding with the games again. I can fortunately call now. Yeah. And the soap opera of the summer for us. Yeah, Marcelino. His statements prior to the game against Sporting Gijón during the last game of the season weren't the most correct words he could have stated. It was a bad choice of words. Pretty much he said, I would really like Sporting Gijón to save themselves from relegation.
Right.
Prior to the game against Gijón. That didn't, not many people like what he said, especially the other clubs involved in relegation, like Getafe and, of course, Rayo Vallecano. And then after the game, his wife made a controversial tweet, mission accomplished. pretty much.
Yeah, that was pretty damning. Yeah, not so good.
For way less unfortunate than what Marcelino said.
Yeah, seriously. Did you hear that? That this guy, the president of Rayo, compared Marcelino to the Lufthansa pilot that intentionally crashed.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
I did hear that.
It is just absurd.
It is.
It's a weird situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty, very strange. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's a shame because
he can't really talk when Villarreal got relegated like in 2012. Raúl Camudo scored a goal in an offside position that sent Villarreal to the second division.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't really say, I don't know, bad things about
it.
That's true.
Really,
that's fair.
It's mm-hmm. so strange and kind of sad with what's happened to Villarreal this summer. Such a good season last year. And a lot of excitement about five Spanish teams being in the group stage again. Villarreal back on the way up after coming back from the hell that is the second division. But, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Did, like you said, the prospect of having five Spanish teams was very exciting.
Yeah.
But, of course, it didn't happen, unfortunately.
So, you guys are in Europa League. Any thoughts on how far the Villarreal can go? What's the group like? How difficult is it going to be?
It's a relatively easy group. We got FC Zurich, it's very surprising how they qualified, even though they got relegated from in Switzerland.
Wow!
Because,
I actually did not know that.
Yeah, they won the Swiss Cup, so that's how they qualified. And then we have Dinamo from Bucharest,
mm-hmm.
from Romania, and this Turkish team. It's a relatively easy group. We are should have not many complications winning the group. Although not many people are excited playing Europa League once again.
Yeah.
The prize money is very poor compared to the Champions League. Because you know, just by instantly qualifying to the group stage in the Champions League, that's like. 12 million.
Yeah, it's 12. It's 12 million euros right there, just being in the group stage.
Correct. Yeah.
And then Monaco's got that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it seems like a pretty straightforward group, and potentially another deep Europa League run for Villarreal, as unsatisfying as it may be, still and potentially a chance at silverware. Unless Sevilla get dropped from the group stage again, in which case, just forget it.
Of course.
Because this is Sevilla's competition. Speaking of Sevilla in the Champions League, Atletico and Real Madrid both know their groups. Atletico have the group of death, as I think some people have picked up on. Atletico drew Bayern Munich again, and PSV, two of their knockout opponents from last season, as well as Rostov from Russia. So Atletico facing another trip. Last year played in Kazakhstan, this year had to play in Russia. Martin, thoughts on the group? Is it winnable? I think there's a general consensus Atletico are going to get out of the group. It'll be complicated, but they'll get out of it for sure. Can they win it?
Yeah, I think it could be a lot tougher. Just when you look at the past here, there's a lot of scenarios that were shown out about the toughest group you could get. I think you take this going into it. I do think Bayern Munich will win it. Just not being pessimistic, but I just think they're too strong of a team. I know over two legs they left Madrid to beat them, but I think they're more equipped travel wise to Russia and stuff like that. But I do trust in Simeone rotation wise. It's just, I think when you're looking at the Champions League draw, you also have to look at the league fixtures afterwards to know if it's a good draw or not. And I was looking at Lefty's league fixtures, and we have 5 away games.
A lot of away games.
Yeah. After the only time we have a league home game is after PSV. This week, Sporting next week. But after that, it's 5 away games after we play midweek. And I think that's a tough challenge, especially when you're going to Russia in midweek, and then we're coming back to play Sevilla away. I mean, that's bound to get the legs. You're not going to have them at 100%.
It's an underrated part of this level of competitive football, and also about just the fact that in general these teams don't actually have to fly very far to do their normal season, right? Like, so in the United States, like, you'll have teams fly across the country to play each other in whatever sport, but in Spain, the most, there's only 2 total, I think there's only really 1 time zone. So, the fact that these teams would have to fly to Russia to play is actually a big deal. And you're totally right to point that out, because, one of the things that we talk about when we talk about teams being unable to repeat as Champions League winners or never doing it in modern times is partially because of the extra added travel in that winter break. That's one of the big issues, right, where you're flying to this Intercontinental Cup, and it's almost always somewhere like Japan
or Morocco or
Dubai or wherever, right? And if it's in Morocco, that's not too bad for Madrid, right? But if it's I remember when I was a kid, it was in Japan.
Yeah, and, that's when it started. It was in Japan.
I think it's in Japan this year too. I don't remember, but
you're playing in it. You should know.
Yeah, I can know it. Regardless, I won't be going to it, so this is not for me to deal with. But no, it's definitely that's definitely a real issue, and it's one of the reasons that having these kind of supranational tournaments is tough. So, for example, I've heard people say we need to do a intercontinental version of the Champions League.
No, we don't.
That is dumb.
We don't need to do that. That is just asking for it.
Yeah.
But just looking after Bayern Munich at home as well, it's a 12 o'clock kickoff against Valencia away. So again, it's bad enough having
Simeone is going to love that kickoff time.
Less time, and it's going to be tough. And that's why the two fixtures that let you have dropped points already, they all add up. It only gets tougher from here on out, and I think that's why so many fans are disappointed about it.
Yeah, and that's understandable. So Atletico have 5 away games after the group stage, in between group stage games. Real Madrid have 5 home games, Gabe.
Yeah.
Aren't you lucky? Again.
Definitely a scam, I'm sure. There are going to be plenty of points, because if we have 5 home games now, it means we're going to have 5 away games later in the schedule, right? So I don't know.
I think March or April, you guys have kind of a murderous stretch, so to speak.
Our Madrid's October is quite soft, but the next couple of weeks, just like for Atleti, it's going to be a grind for Madrid too. I mean, we have obviously not as tough a a Champions League group, luckily for Madrid. But, I mean, look, Atleti really, I think, got the strongest group in the draw, I think. I mean, this was one of the – can we just have a whole, like, quick pause to discuss how ridiculous this Champions League draw was?
Leicester's group.
Leicester's group is one of the most pathetic Champions League groups that I've ever seen in my entire life. It's the Europa League group. Like, there's not a single team in there that, like in normal years, would progress to the next round even. Like, it's absurd. And then you, like, Atleti is stuck with PSV, the team that almost eliminated you last year, and Bayern. Like, that's ridiculous.
Thank you for that, though. Thank you.
We don't have to talk about it, but that's my feeling.
No, you do make a good point.
You really do.
I know that you have kind of made a whole point of the whole seedings changing, and, you know, you actually have seven league winners in the top seeds, but I don't know what you guys think, how that's worked out for them.
I don't like this new arrangement with the league winners and the Champions League holders going to pot one and everyone else going otherwise based on coefficient. This time, it's actually come back to hurt Atletico. The past 3 years, it hadn't. Atletico got pretty manageable groups. This time, it's come back to bite them. And I think it punishes really, really good teams who don't win the league. And in La Liga, particularly, only one team can win it, and the three best teams in Europe are in that league.
Right.
So it punishes teams like Atletico and who don't win it.
And the new changes that are coming even after this, right, are going to hurt. I mean, they're really going to hurt teams in France the most. Like, if you're not the top four teams in France, you're going to be fighting for really one to two spaces total coming out of that league. Where they're doing, like, there's talk about adding a historical base. It's basically like, oh, what happens if Manchester United doesn't make the Champions League again? Well, we got to figure out a way to stick them in there at the expense of, you know, whatever team from Portugal or France.
Or Serbia or wherever, the Netherlands. The leagues that are considered the minor leagues.
Right, but it's obnoxious, though. It's like, right, like, I understand that, like, we should, you know, on some level, watching United play, you know, Bayern or Madrid or Atleti is going to draw more people, man, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be a better game, and it doesn't mean that United deserves to be there.
Yeah, I think that's it, just on the basis of merit. If they don't make the top four in the domestic league, then they really shouldn't be there.
That's kind of the general thought process, I think. And then they can't make new changes till 2021, and then who knows what's going to happen then. There could be a North Atlantic League. There could be a Super League. These are still all under discussion, and it's the Champions League format. The Champions League itself might be fading away.
Yeah, I think Leicester, and to a lesser extent, Atleti, but at least when Madrid and Barcelona still on the Champions League that year, but I think what Leicester done this year, I think it's really going to bring a lot of talk from the big clubs, if you will, going into 2021.
Mm-hmm. Because it comes at the expense of one of the traditional powers, like a Man United or Chelsea or etc.
Well, you look at who missed out in the Champions League this season, in England, like Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United, you'd imagine that they hold some degree of power, you know, within the UEFA headquarters to at least, you know, say, you know, we make more money and stuff like that, and we bring a larger audience. And yet Leicester, as much of a fairy tale story that we see it as, I don't think they're going to see it as much.
They're not a traditional club. They don't have the kind of weight. And Atletico are slowly coming out of that tier where they're just, you know, molestamos, the Spanish term for it. Atletico are getting more respect, but still, this is punishing them, punishing a lot of other really good teams that were in pot two. Borussia Dortmund getting stuck with Real Madrid.
Yeah, and Sporting. I mean, it's not like Madrid has a super easy group also, right? Like, it's when you compare, like, our groups, you know, versus this group that Leicester is in, it's just absurd. So I don't mean that we should, like, you know, and maybe it's because I'm not counting Leicester as a team that is really has any shot. Like, in any normal year, Leicester, if they'd managed to sneak into the Champions League, would be paired with, you know, as a third, you know, third seed in the group, and would go right into the Europa League, and fair enough. But it looks to me like there's no way that Leicester doesn't make the next round of the Champions League. So there's going to be one team after this is going to be pretty psyched because they landed Lesnar. And, like, maybe we shouldn't be, right? But at the same time, like, Lightning will not strike twice, and this isn't even the same Lesnar. I mean, like, they don't even have Conte, who is, like, really, you know, their big defensive presence. Like, I just, there's no way that Lesnar makes it out of the next round. And maybe I'm just jinxing it. Maybe I'm Madrid or, you know, Atleti or someone really big will get paired and then go and lose to Lesnar. But I just don't see it happen.
Lesnar to the final now. Confirmed. Good job, Gabe.
I mean, I'm fine. I would be okay with that.
Our old friend Claudio Ranieri.
You know, Atletico and Dortmund, two recent Champions League finalists, they've actually done well in the actual competition with Leicester. They've never been in the Champions League, and yet the first year in there, and then part one, and get an easy group with Atletico and Dortmund. And, you know, there's a chance they will struggle. I do think both teams will actually make it out of the groups, but it's not going to be easy for them, especially compared to Leicester.
Yeah.
Or Spurs. Like.
Yeah, Spurs got themselves a tough group.
It's a joke, right?
Yes, it was.
I just want to make sure.
So, what else about the Champions League? But yeah, it looks like a pretty rough road for Atletico in the group stage. Should get out of it, though. I think that they'll likely come in second, unless they don't lose in Munich. Win all three home games, go to Munich, take a point in Russia. And then I think they can be in a pretty good position. But otherwise, I think probably second place, which means they'll be unseeded heading into the last 16 draw, which means they could get a team like PSG, any of the other group winners.
What do you guys have winning it this year? I'd be interested to hear from all of you.
Ooh.
Martin, you first.
I think Bayern Munich. I think, you know, I don't want to be one of those that chose down in Guardiola because he didn't win the Champions League with them, but they really got to... You know, Ancelotti knows what he's doing in there. And obviously the squad is just amazing. But I'd actually fancy Bayern Munich this year.
Bayern are extremely strong. I'm going to pick Real Madrid, though.
No way.
Yeah.
First time with Peters.
Yep. I think you guys are going to win it again.
Wow. That would be incredible. I don't think so. In recent years, Madrid hasn't had a squad this deep coached by someone who commands this level of respect. But
exactly.
I still think that even with all those positives, that the length of the season is just going to wear this team down too much to repeat. I'm hoping that Madrid wins La Liga this year. That's my big hope for this season. I'm going with Bayern also. Though it's hard to say to count out Barcelona. As much as I would like to count out Barcelona.
Of course.
Yeah.
Francisco?
I would have to say Bayern Munich as well.
Man, I'm the only one, and I'm picking Atletico's chief rival, of course. Only one not picking Bayern.
My friends over at the SB Nation page and yours.
Yeah. Always making friends here. Always making associations.
I mean, it's a good way to reverse jinx, right? Like, or to jinx it, like...
Aha, you got me.
They call it, like, I don't know. That's why I mentioned Barcelona.
Oh, my. So, Champions League, that starts pretty soon. Pretty exciting. Or traumatizing for some Atletico fans, considering what's happened to them two in the past 3 years. We do have some mailbag questions before we talk a little bit about World Cup qualifiers, and then we'll be out of your ears. Martin, we have a question from Nick Jones, NKJones724 on Twitter. What's going on with Jose Ma? He means Jose Jimenez, who Gabe has been linked with Real Madrid this past summer.
Yeah.
Hasn't played yet.
I think that question's for you, right, Martin?
It's interesting because up until that Bayern Munich game in the second leg, he seemed to be... You know, you knew the centre-backs were going to be Godin and Jimenez, but he had a bit of a disappointing game that time. And we know Simeone doesn't really have a lot of time or trust for players. You know, obviously he has his favourites, and if you're not one of them, it can be tough. Just ask Martinez. You know, I know he didn't do much to actually work his way back into the team. But I think with Jimenez, since that Bayern Munich game, you know, after that was the Champions League final disappointment, and I think he's recovered. I don't think Simeone's kind of put him ahead of Savage ever since.
Yep, Savage started the final, played very well. He played pretty well the first two games. Not so great against Alaves, but it was fine, I think, against Leganes. Andrew Gaffney, at Gaffney BLC, Yahoo's La Liga writer, he made a pretty interesting point how this is kind of similar to Rafael Varane's situation at Madrid, in how, you know, Jimenez is young, obviously very talented, but there are two really good center backs in front of him. Diego Godin is probably the world's best. I think he's the world's best.
I do too.
And Savage plays a safe game, consistent center back, really good in the air, really has adjusted well to Spain. And Jose Ma just kind of needs to bide his time and wait for that right opportunity. Or he could go, you know, leave the club searching for that opportunity and in the process net 65 million euros for Atletico.
It's interesting though, because there were so many teams, I'm thinking of Chelsea and Arsenal just off the top of my head, they were looking for center backs this summer. And you would imagine that they would have at least contacted Leti. I know Arsenal linked to him.
Yeah, the word was Arsenal, but no way were they paying that.
Yeah, but, you know, you wonder if Leti said, you know, hands off, and then first two games in the season, and I don't see him starting tomorrow either. It's a bit of a mixed signal, really, in terms of him and where he's going.
I think he does stay, at least through this season. Then he might just reevaluate. But he's so talented, and he's still so young, just 21 years old.
It would be pretty crazy for Atleti to sell now, right? Like, going into the ban.
Yeah, exactly. He's got to stick around.
I think that players can be sold, I think, right? But not. But it would be pretty
odd,
pretty silly, and very unlikely, considering, you know, he's such an important, at least the insurance piece, right? Like, if Godin or so, he's someone who can slot in and be very good and competent at that position, so... Is that what I'd say?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's more important he stays now. Speaking of the transfer ban, we have a couple questions on Antoine Griezmann, our favorite Frenchman. From Jeffrey Mendez, at Jeffrey3198, does the transfer ban make Griezmann likelier to stay or leave next summer? I think it means he stays. He can't leave.
He's got to stay.
Has to stay. And he said in interview most recently with Telefoot last week, he wouldn't even think about leaving Atletico unless Simeone left.
Now, what do you guys make of some of the stories that Simeone was looking, you know, to change clubs this summer, but that there was a rather substantial rescission clause and people weren't willing to pay that? Did you hear that? I read that.
Yeah, his buyout is set at 15 million euros, which is insane for a manager. There was a story in El Confidencial this week that he's going to leave in 2018 and go manage Inter. I think everyone kind of knows he's going to leave and go manage Inter at some point. And 2018 seems like kind of reasonable. He has said on many occasions he wants to manage the team, lead them out at the new stadium at La Paneta next year, and then he would leave before the end of his contract, but that he would leave, that we're getting towards the end of the Simeone era. Now, it's still too early to say whether that clause will be activated, whether even... It's too early because, you know, we're 2 years out from when that could potentially happen, because new stadium doesn't open for another calendar year. But it's a lot of Atleti fans facing their own mortality when you talk about Simeone leaving, because he's done so much for the club as a player, as a manager. He's just done an incredible amount for the club.
Yeah,
it would be damaging.
One of the things that actually helps Atleti in terms of the release clause, you know, it is a bit of money, but if you remember, Chelsea actually paid the release clause of Anders Villas-Boas back in 2011 for 13 million.
So teams can do it. And Inter have money now. Inter can do it. Inter had the Chinese money coming up in the Suning Group.
Yeah.
There are teams
Chelsea
that can do it.
With him 6 months later. So teams might be thinking, oh, you know, it might work out, and then we've just done what Chelsea have done and spent like 15 million euros on not even playing a manager that we're just going to have to pay off again.
Yep. And
I'm worried about, I don't know if you guys are, you know, obviously you guys are probably not particularly happy about thinking about Simeone leaving, but I, you know, obviously we're bitter rivals in our clubs, but for the overall, like, league, I'm worried about what I'm seeing as kind of a brain drain of coaches. Like, I actually think that Simeone has been, you know, an absolute wondrous thing, just for the health of the Spanish league generally, moving this from a duopoly to a real three-team league, you know, and I'd be very upset to see him leave, and especially because I agree with what you guys are saying, that if he goes, I think it's very possible that the next step after that is someone coming in with $100 million for Griezmann, and that, because I actually do think that that's around where Griezmann is probably worth right now. He really...
That's his buyout. That's what it was said with his renewal. It's $100 million now.
Yeah, I mean, that... I don't think that's insane at all. That, you know, that for that, that's what I'd pay if I was trying to go grab him. You know, he's, you know, probably the... he's definitely in the top 10, probably in the top 5 best players in the world right now, so... it'd be pretty upsetting, and I'm very worried about coaching brain drain. I actually think that coaches have a huge impact on the overall quality of the top of the league, especially. And I'm worried. I'm worried that, you know, the way that things are shaping up in England, they have, you know, of the top 4 coaches in the world, they have 3 of them. So not ideal.
It's not, and it kind of depends who Atleti would bring in to replace him. The I guess the silver lining is Atletico are as financially healthy as they've ever been, and all the mismanagement of the Gil era when Atletico were relegated and really had so much debt up to their ears of debt. The club's financially healthy; their debt's going to be gone by the time they open La Paneta, and you can lure some big names, but we don't like to think about that. But at any rate. Atletico are in a position where they're now becoming a destination for players and possibly for coaches too. So it all depends on if you make the right choice. The infrastructure is sound. There are lots of young players there. There are players who are going to leave with Simeone. We know that because the squad is in lockstep with him. They love him. They would kill for him.
What we love about Simeone now is what we're going to dislike 2 years from now, is that close relationship he has with the players, because of the players that are going to follow him out just because of that.
Yeah, probably, and there could be a few of them, so not time to brace ourselves for that yet. But
I think that it's also, though, that we know, I know from experience that both Ancelotti and Mourinho have a similar relationship with players, that they get their guys and they get these people that really worship them. And in both of these coaches' exits from Madrid, they actually didn't take any Madrid players, or almost none. I think, you know, there was very little defection when both coaches left. So maybe one would hope that would be similar. If I were an Atleti fan, I would hope that would, you know, that particular thing would repeat itself, where it seems like he's going to come and take his whole team, but actually, you know, they're actually just as loyal to the crest as they are to the coach.
I think there are players like who came through the academy, like Koke, especially, who's loyal to the badge and won't ever leave. He's one of those guys who strikes me as a one-club man.
Yeah,
Robbie Dunn, the co-editor of Events of the Calderon, great guy. He's not with us today, but he managed to ask to get a question in for the mailbag. What do Atletico do if Griezmann leaves at any time? Who replaces him, or do they have anyone that might? You're going to get $100 million for him. I would think you can find someone pretty good to replace him. And even if they don't, you have Angel Correa, who I think a lot of people regard as one of the next great young Argentine strikers, along with Dybala and some others. So Correa is around. A lot of it's to be determined, I think, because of the money you're going to get for Griezmann, maybe for other sales in a year or two down the road after the ban's over.
Maybe the move would be Dybala, but man, is that...
Oh, that'd be fun.
But you're losing Griezmann, who...
But still...
The decline of Cristiano and Messi, I mean...
Yeah.
Tim and Bale and maybe Pogba, and then, like, a huge gulf in class in total in terms... And maybe, you know, if other people kind of step up, but man, that's like the for me, that's like the elite crew, and then there's not much after that. And Dybala, like, yeah, he's exciting and good, but I don't know if he can quite get to that level.
If you look at Lecce, like, through the years, you know, they never actually replaced a player like for like. You know, you look when Aguero left, they brought in Falcao. You know, you wouldn't say that they're like
And Torres left the first time. When Torres left the first time, they bought Forlan.
It's kind of hard to pinpoint who exactly they will bring in, because it's not. I don't think they're a team that actually tries to replace a player like for like. I think they might just change the system of the whole play and just go for something completely different.
But again, that's a little further down the road. I think it's pretty much confirmed now that Griezmann is going to stay as long as Simeone stays, which probably 2 more years or a year after next year. So let's wrap up today by talking a little bit about the World Cup qualifiers. I know it's international break. We don't like talking about it, but a lot of players from Atletico, from Real Madrid, from Villarreal participating with their national teams over the break. Francisco, we'll start with you. Villarreal players playing for their national teams, who did what? How did they do? Did anyone get hurt?
We only had 2 players, unfortunately. Lopetegui didn't have popped up, neither Bruno or Mario Gaspar.
Mm.
We had Rukavina from Serbia. They're pretty much out of making it to the World Cup. Then we also have Bojan Jokic from Slovenia. Slovenia is pretty much out of the World Cup as well. So, fortunately, they both return healthy, so we have no casualties, which is good.
Yeah, very lucky no one got hit with the FIFA virus over there. Although, you know, it's only 2 players, but as long as everyone's back healthy. Gabe, lots of Real Madrid players always go away on international break.
Yeah, in this case, it was more than it had been previously, as the Madrid gossip rag shit press. Wow. I was very excited to note to the Barcelona-based shit press that there were more Real Madrid players on the Spanish national team than the Barcelona players.
That sounds about right. Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, it was exciting. Morata, there was an injury scare, but nothing. Asensio debuted for Spain, which, you know, about time. Benzema didn't get called by France, which remains stupid. I still think that if France had called Benzema, I mean, like, you stick Benzema on that team instead of Giroud. I mean, like, it's just a different game. Like, it's just, I don't know. Seems a bit shooting yourself in the foot going into that tournament. Like, I get it. Like, Benzema's, you know, kind of like this whole thing is just absolutely bananas that he was involved in. But, you know, he was the best striker in your country, so I don't really get it. And, yeah, I mean, like, Bale was great with Wales, as he is, and James looked really good with Colombia. So, yeah, like, I mean, literally, with international stuff, the only thing that matters is that no one gets injured. And thankfully, you know, no, it doesn't seem like anyone got injured, so... Now let's get back to the real stuff, you know?
Really could not agree more. And finally, Atletico, a lot of players went away for Atleti. Yannick Carrasco, for one, he scored for his second international goal for Belgium as they handled Cyprus pretty easily. But that was after losing to Spain, and Koke played 2 really good games for Spain in the victory against Belgium and the 8-0 win against Liechtenstein off a free kick. Assisted a Diego Costa goal, which is kind of a rarity for Spain. But there you go. Diego Godin, Jose Jimenez, another 2 of the 17 internationals for Atletico. They both played 180 minutes for Uruguay. Carrasco played 167 minutes. Koke also played 180. Griezmann was doing Ronaldinho-like things for France, but they couldn't beat Belarus. It seems like... Poor guy, man. Saul got his first cap for Spain under Lopetegui, but he then went back to the U21 side. Thomas playing in Ghana. Oblak, Savage, Rusalko all playing 90 minutes for their national teams. And yeah, 17 players went away. There were days where Atletico had literally had 4 players in training.
Yeah.
So it's both a good and bad thing that these players are now getting recognized by their home nations for the work that they've done and the growth that they've displayed as players, but, you know, they come back a little tired. That's most of the squad leaving for, you know, a week and a half at a time, 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah, to be honest, though, the one player that I picked out from there that I think had a really good week is Carrasco. If because, you know, when a new manager comes in and he gives you the chance to start alongside the player that has it in De Bruyne, classically he took it well.
I think he could flourish under new manager.
Yeah, he obviously trusts him, doesn't he?
He does. I think he started both games.
Yeah, he did. I think it's a good start, you know, especially under a new manager, like we're saying, and it's one thing to actually get in the team, it's another to keep your place. So, and he scored, so I think he's definitely going to be starting for a good while. Especially
he's an exciting player for Atleti. You guys, the very least that can be said is that Atleti has put together quite a roster. Like this, he is really exciting. Like Saul, Koke are both such exciting players. Like this is a good squad. So it's also just as deep as Madrid. So like, just to go all the way back to the beginning of the show, I think we're both sides are well positioned to get through the transfer bin.
Yeah. Thankfully, as well, because it could have just turned into a one-team league in Barcelona.
Right. And absolutely no one can best that Carrasco celebration in the Champions League.
Absolutely not. Great celebration.
So awesome.
Yep.
Well, you know, I think people wish it would have ended differently, but it was a great celebration, nonetheless.
We're never going to let that one go, are we, Jerry?
Yeah, probably not. Especially it was the second time it happened, so. But alas, that's about all we've got for today. Thanks so much for listening. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Into the Calderon. Like us on Facebook. You can follow Martin at Martin, what's your at?
_MC1905_.
There you go. You can follow Gabe at Gabe Lesrop. You can follow me at JB Baron Francisco. You can follow you on Twitter at
@HERMLOZM.
Wonderful. So follow all of us, tweet at us. Again, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next Colchonero chat. Ciao.